In this week's episode, a rare landing failure for SpaceX, a new China factory is going up for Tesla, and EV incentives are about to go bye-bye, maybe. Maybe. Hi, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool technologies that are changing the world today to make our tomorrow totally ludicrous. This is episode 12, I believe. I'm Joe Scott from Answers with Joe. With me, Tim Dodd.
Hi, it's me, Tim Dodd, from Everyday Astronaut, the online stuff. And we also have Ben.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Sullins from Teslanomics. How are we doing today, fellas?
I think for the first time ever, something major happened the day before we shot this instead of the day after.
Really? And we actually have, like, time to let, like, news cycles happen, so we can actually, like, sit back and reflect on it and talk about it without being like, well, maybe, you know?
Yeah. We're not just reading tweets.
Well.
Oh, we're going to be doing some of that, I'm sure.
I'm sure we're going to be
Tim's like, shh,
dude.
That's all I got, man. Don't give away our...
There goes our whole strategy. Great.
There goes our entire show.
Well, why don't we just go right into that? We clearly are wanting to, we're chomping at the bit, so take it away,
yeah.
Tim.
Well, it was a crazy busy week for SpaceX. A great week. To be honest, like December is just Christmas already. Come early for us space nerds. There's so many launches. There's another launch tomorrow already. There's a Delta IV Heavy tomorrow night. Ben, you might be able to even see that. It's a Vandenberg launch. So that will be potentially look outside at 8 at night or something. I'll tell you when to poke your head out, and you might actually see a Delta IV Heavy.
I'll be asleep. I'll be sleeping.
I know, Dad. but this is a busy week. We had a launch on Monday. SpaceX had a really exciting launch on Monday. They had a launch Wednesday. There's another launch Friday. Rocket Lab's launching next Wednesday already again.
Oh, nice. Cool.
Like this is Christmas come
it's
early.
Up.
Tis the season
for rocket launches. And just before we even get started with that, people ask, like, is there something special? Is there some alignment of the Earth that's advantageous to launch in December or something? Nope.
Just colder weather? Does colder weather help?
It has nothing to do with anything other than this just all lining up like this.
I was actually wondering if all the satellite companies are trying to, you know, blow their budget before the end of the year or something. That's what most companies do.
Yeah, that's true. They're like, fiscal year's ending, crap!
Yeah.
No, this is just the manifest lined up this way, and everyone's launching at once. It's just how it works. Who knows? I mean, this could happen anytime. This could be March. This could be April. Sometimes you just get busy lumps of stuff, and here we are. So Monday, we had a pretty exciting launch on Monday. This was SpaceX launching the first time. So this is hard to say. I like making it more complicated than it is. For the first time, they relaunched a rocket for the second time, making it the third time it flew. So really, this was the third flight of this particular booster, which is awesome. This was for the SSOA mission out of Vandenberg Air Force Base. And this was putting 64 satellites into space at once on a single launch. 64 satellites. This was their 64th flight. Sorry, SpaceX doesn't actually have their video up of this yet, so we do have to watch the one with my face in it. So you're seeing double me if you're watching this on YouTube right now. I was so excited because they were trying to attempt to catch the fairing and Mr. Steven. And they teased us with a shot, a live feed of it. And I was really excited because I was confident this was going to be the one that they were going to land or catch one of these fairings. And again, those fairings are, you know, they could fit a school bus inside them. They are massive.
What were the satellites they were launching? Was this a Starlink thing or...
There's a company, I should have remembered already, but I think it's called Spaceflight, period.
creative naming, okay.
And yeah, it's their job to basically get a whole bunch of small satellites to be able to launch together. So they kind of curate and say like, oh, all these satellites are kind of doing the same thing-ish. We can lob them all on the same rocket. You know, they must all be going into the sun's synchronous orbit. Let's just ride share. It's like a ride sharing program. And so they were coming from all over the place. So that's pretty cool. That's the most SpaceX has done, but it's still not the world record. The Indian Space Agency, ISRO, launched 104 CubeSats once.
Have you seen the footage from that?
Yes.
It's hilarious. I mean, like not hilarious, rocket. But it's like somebody's flaying corn off a corn cob. They're just like peeling off and flying away. It's crazy.
Like someone just kind of, a rabbit kind of pooping into space every couple seconds, you know?
See, yeah, that's a more eloquent metaphor there. Thank you.
Much more eloquent.
Thank you, Tim.
But you can see in the footage, if you're watching on YouTube, if you're just listening, I'll describe it. But since this was the third time this rocket has flown, it was sitting on the launch pad, filthy. Almost dark gray, like charcoal gray. And don't forget, these things come out of the factory brand new, shiny white, just like the upper part of the rocket. And it's sitting here on the launch pad before it even flew. It was already just filthy, you know, because we had seen these refly, and they're pretty dirty when they, you know, when they are reflown, you can tell they get beat up and they have a lot of soot and apparently a lot of scorch marks, according to Elon. And it's pretty cool to see it like this. And this is only three times. These boosters are developed to fly 10 times without major refurbishment, without like any scheduled actual maintenance and refurbishment. They're designed to hopefully fly 10 times. So can you imagine this thing in 10 more times? That first stage is just going to be black.
Yeah, it's going to be the MKBHD rocket, right? The matte black everything.
Yeah, it really will be. And I think that's awesome. So the rocket, let me skip forward here a little bit. The rocket went off just beautifully. Ta-da. Let me get to the... I'm bad at this. I should have probably... There we go. So, yeah, the rocket went off perfectly. We weren't expecting anything too crazy since they're pretty good at flying these things now. The mission went off absolutely perfectly. The first stage came back, and it couldn't land... It technically, like, performance-wise, had plenty of performance to be able to land back at land since this was a pretty light satellite. It had enough performance that it performed a boost back, but instead of landing at the landing zone, it actually had to land just off the coast, which is ironic because now you can see it here. This is close enough that they have, you know, ground footage to be able to zoom in. It was, like, 40 kilometers away. And ironically, they did something... unintentionally the other day, similar to this. We'll get to that in a second. But so here we go. This is the third time this particular booster has gone to space, let go of the upper stage. The second stage continues off into orbit, and the first stage landed successfully for the third time. So that was huge. That's just further proving out this whole thing. And then
I was really excited that they had footage of it landing on the drone ship, because they always use the feed from the drone ship and it always cuts out at the last second, and every time it happens I'm like, there's some flat earther out there going, see, they have to cut it, it's not real, you know, they come back to some studio shot. And
one
so
of my next
they,
one
I,
of my
I was
next
always
videos.
Like, why don't they just get a second boat out there and shoot it landing, and maybe they shot that from the land. But anyway, I was glad to see it, that they finally were able to capture that, because I'd never actually seen that
one before. Of my next videos is about that, and like why they don't just do that, you know. There's always like the why don't they just, you know, and it's going to be kind of about that. But one of my favorite ideas about that whole concept before we move on is the idea that like they always get the footage, like we always see footage, you know, they have the local recordings of it landing. So if you're a conspiracy theorist and like, see, it cuts, and then they show you footage later and there's like a 5 second delay, like that's almost to me proof that this is real. Are you saying the video editor, the director, couldn't go boop on time, and every time he's like 5 seconds, he's like, oh crap, I missed it again. I missed inserting the clean footage.
I've done this 26 times in a row,
and I keep missing it. Like, what do they think? Like that would be easy. In this, they have the footage, they could just overlay it, and we'd never know. But that delay and the cut is actually like proof of it landing, which is just ironic. So anyway, this mission was just absolutely flawless. The fairings, however, later we found out they were not successfully caught by Mr. Stevens. But yet Elon claims, according to Twitter, which I have pulled up here, because this is basically the Elon Musk Twitter show. There we go. Falcon fairing halves missed the net, but touched down softly in the water. Mr. Steven is picking them up. Plan is to dry them out and launch again. Nothing wrong with a little swim.
So just stick it in a thing of rice and...
Basically, but when is... since when has this been the thing? What? Like, they've had fairings softly land in the ocean... like five times now.
They just need to turn it into a jet ski when it lands and have it automatically find its way back home. I mean,
turn it into Wave Runner 64. I don't know if you guys remember that game. And just have them, the two fairing halves, race back to shore.
Exactly. Exactly.
I don't know why all of a sudden now they're saying it's okay to try to reuse them, even if they've been exposed to salt water like that, whereas opposed to, like, they went through all the effort of making a boat with a giant net to try to catch it so it doesn't hit the salt water. Now they're like, we'll probably just try it anyway.
Give it a go.
Why not? But maybe you just touched on the concept of how to fix it. It's to have multiple boats. Mr. Stevens, there's multiples, in which case, I don't know, increase your chances maybe.
Yeah, and then I don't know. I mean, I'll let them figure it out. Rumor has it, some people were speculating that a few months ago they secured waterproof acoustic paneling for the inside of the fairings, and that's one of the components that if it got wet or damp even, would not be secure to refly again. So that they're hoping that by potentially having, you know, a more waterproof, water-resistant interior acoustic foaming, that they could then handle a little swim, and maybe that's exactly what they're doing, and the whole Mr. Stevens thing will end up just being a recovery boat instead of a catching boat. But I think they're still going to want to try, because it really does seem like a safer bet to catch it before it lands in icky water.
I'm just really curious how resilient or how strong that netting is, man, because, I mean, this thing's not light, right?
One could guess it's strong enough.
Well, we shall see. Maybe.
Well, they've been dropping them. They've done like five helicopter drop tests and successfully caught them like that with like used.
I'd love to see that footage.
We don't have it.
Because it's fake.
Because, of course, you know, they're going to try to sell this to an investor and rip them off.
This is all CGI.
So you spent the money to fake it and then won't show it to anybody.
Yeah.
So is that the only SpaceX rocket component to take a swim this week?
Yep, let's move on. So, okay, here's the big one. I think you all saw this coming. Before we even start talking about this mission, though, let's remind everyone what this mission was. And despite it having an unexpected outcome for the landing... hold on, I gotta mute this. It still was a massively successful mission, of course. So here we are. This was CRS-16. This was a resupply mission for NASA. That's where NASA pays SpaceX to send something up to the International Space Station. These are experiments and food and provisions and things that need to happen on station. This is, again, the 16th one that SpaceX has done. And these missions are basically the reason why we have a Falcon 9 period. If it wasn't for these NASA contracts, the NASA investment in the Commercial Crew program, the Falcon 9 program would have never, at least not this quickly and successfully made it. It's all thanks to NASA's big investment and belief in the Falcon 9 program that we have these rockets. These are some of my favorite missions. The first mission I ever saw personally was CRS-3, which was in 2014. So they've done a lot since 2014. And that was the first one that I saw was the first rocket that had landing legs. And everyone is like literally laughing at it. They thought it was so stupid. Like, I was out at the press site and people were just gabbing about how stupid of an idea this was. And how big of an idiot Mr. Musk is. This billionaire Musk thinks he's going to try to land a rocket. What a joker. Like, I just heard it all.
And this is a new rocket.
Clearly he can't.
This is a brand new booster that flew today. So unlike the one Monday that had flown three times now, this was a brand new Block 5 booster, ironically. And it went off without a hitch. The flight was perfect. It got its payload, the CRS Dragon capsule, into its perfect you know, nominal insertion, meaning it's exactly where it needs to be in order to keep heading to the International Space Station. It'll arrive at ISS on Saturday. It'll berth with the International Space Station on Saturday, not dock, technically. and so, yeah, so the mission was perfectly successful. And don't forget, then, SpaceX is the only company currently able to deliver things to space and then recover a booster. That's their, like, pony right now. They're able to do this, and no one else can do this. And 3 years ago today, no one had done that, including SpaceX, you know. So these landings were completely, you know, they were completely experimental and unheard of. So what we're about to see here was on the way down, the booster performs what's called a boost back burn. So in other words, it burns retrograde, so into its direction of travel, until it starts actually going backwards, back towards land. And in this case, it was planning to land at LZ-1, the landing pad out there at Cape Canaveral. And it did that whole regime perfectly. It did its boost back burn successfully, pointed itself right back towards the target. At that point, it's basically following its ballistic trajectory. It's basically a missile. And they and they purposefully aim just off the coast, intentionally, in case there is any issues. If there's any issues with the booster, they want it to come up short. And then they want the booster to be able to dogleg at the last second in the very lower portion of the atmosphere so that no matter what, you know, so at this point, say the rocket would have a complete failure, it's not going to fall or be able to even steer itself far enough to get to someone's house or anything. You know what I mean? That there's only so far this thing could even manage to send itself in a direction once it's in the atmosphere. It can only, quote unquote, fly so far with these grid fins and things. So they intentionally come up a little bit short and make it so the grid fins and the landing burn has to dogleg itself over the landing pad. So what happens now is about a few seconds later, they perform what's called the re-entry burn, and they now change it to the entry burn, which is funny because it is re-entering the atmosphere. And that slows the booster down about 50% of what it was traveling, and this allows it to be able to survive hitting the atmosphere, because otherwise the atmosphere would totally destroy this thing, basically. And at this point, those grid fins, you know, in space do nothing because they have no aerodynamic, they have no atmosphere to do anything with, you know, they're pointless. But now that we're getting into the thicker and thicker parts of the atmosphere, they start to have more and more control authority. And really quickly, all of a sudden, you can see my face in this replay. I was like, what is going on? And I'm like, that's not good. That is not good.
And what are people seeing if, or what are we looking at if you're just listening?
You're seeing me open mouth, gaping, slack jawed. What just happened? And me still absolutely like listening into what they're saying in the background, going, this is not normal. This is not what's ever happened from these things. Even some of their very first recovery attempts didn't have grid fins. And I think it was like their first or second attempt ever at landing. It started to spin out of control. They didn't ever release this footage. But it started to spin out of control, and it ended up not being able to recover from that. And this was looking an awful lot like that. And we're all just sitting there going, what on earth happened? You know, what could have happened? And we got the answers actually almost right away, believe it or not. Elon took to Twitter. So unfortunately, they did cut the footage. And I'm sitting here listening. So again, if you're watching on YouTube, you can see up in the corner probably me listening very closely to what they're saying still in the background. Because you can hear, since they're at Mission Control when they're doing these broadcasts, you hear the call out still very faintly in the background of, like, you know, entry burn started, you know, LZ-1 secure, all these things that are normally called out. And you can hear the crowd reacting, going, you know, yeah. So they still had a feed. And so that's the only thing we were really...
It sounded at first like they actually landed it.
It did.
Just the sound of the crowd.
Well, and let's see what it looks like, because it kind of looked like it, too.
Mm-hmm. So what they would have seen, my friend Das Valdez, who runs K Space Academy or Kerbal Space Academy, depending on which channel you're on, he was live streaming this on Twitch. He has this awesome, like, mobile setup with a really good little point and shoot zoom lens that has like 1,000x zoom or something insane. And he's getting so good at tracking these rockets falling. So live, when that feed cut, when the SpaceX feed cut, he still was streaming it coming down to land. Let me see if I can actually pull that up here. I'll stop sharing my screen for a second. You guys ask questions, and I'm going to try to find this thing here quick, because this is a good place to kind of pick up at.
Did you say that the first attempts didn't have grid fins?
That's correct. The grid fins first appeared, I think, on CRS-4.
So they were trying to land it without basically any way to control it.
They had little nitrogen thrusters at the top of the booster, but they found as it started to hit the atmosphere, they didn't have enough control authority in the atmosphere.
That's like trying to surf without fins on your board. You just like flip around and spin, have nothing to keep you centered.
Exactly. So here we go. I'm going to pull this up. This is just the coolest. Dost, again, and this is what I love. We'll talk about this at the end of this whole segment, is like, I love the spaceflight community because Dost was willing to share this with everyone. You know, he could have been like, nope, this is my property. I did this. But he was super like, yeah, of course, like, use this. And look at this footage, guys. If you're not on YouTube and you're just listening to this, you're seeing an amazing tracking shot of someone who is at the Cape, only about, 8 kilometers away, maybe 5 miles away. And you're seeing a booster just spinning. It's actually staying pretty stable for a good portion of it. And then, but the engine now, you'll start to see, is trying to compensate for those grid fins, which are clearly stuck and not moving. Yet, look at this. It looks like it lands from his point of view.
Yeah, that was the shot. I was like, wait, did it land? And then it just tips over, and you're like, wait, what happened?
Yeah.
Because you can't see the water from this shot.
You cannot see the water from the shot. So let me show you what happened. Let me see here. So Elon, we'll show the next. So this is the uncut shot. Is still that same shot that we were seeing during the live stream, looking down the booster. And you can see here the grid fins are not moving. And those normally articulate and rotate. And you can tell, since they're stuck in a weird, wonky position, the one on the right side of the screen that we're seeing is stuck at like a 45-degree angle. The other one looks to be about a 30. These can all move independently from each other. They don't have to – if they all move simultaneously, like say all of them were to pitch 30 degrees – all four of them, that would make it roll. You know, that would produce a roll on the Z-axis. But oftentimes, you'll see a pair move. So if a pair moves at like 45 degrees in the same direction, that'll induce either a pitch or a yaw. So that's all that control there. Just like the, the tail fin of an airplane or the rear elevators of an airplane, how that moves the positioning of it. That's basically exactly what these are doing. And you could tell that one was stuck in a pretty far position. The other one probably didn't look like it was as far. But, yeah, so that's the first bit of footage we got back. And then Elon shows us this footage, too, from one of their ground tracking stations. This is one that probably would have, they would have cut to during the feed if it was for sure going to land on land. But they knew pretty quickly it was not. So you can see it's just off the coast. I mean, it's only, what is that, half a kilometer? I don't know. It
almost looks, I mean, it's so much, it looked like it had it, if it just had like, I don't know.
No, I feel like if they had tried it on land, it might've actually stayed up.
Yeah.
So here's the next bit. And this is me speculating a little bit here. But I'm pretty sure that there was no like programming saying like abort, don't go to land. I don't think there was anything telling the vehicle to not try to land on land. I think the vehicle was still hoping to try to land on land, but the main way that it gets to land is via the grid fins. Mm-hmm. So if the grid fins experience a failure like they did, the vehicle is going to follow basically its ballistic trajectory and land where it did.
And, like you said, they default to just off the coast.
Exactly. So it's not like they were like, oh, no, it's not looking so good. Make sure it lands in the water. I don't think there was anything behind the scenes. I don't even think there was anything programmed. It's just that the default is that it's going to go where it's going. Mm-hmm. And if everything's working well, then it's able to make it to the landing pad. So they err on the side of caution. And then when everything's working well, it's able to get itself to where it needs to go. If that makes sense.
And they don't even have control over it as it comes down, right?
There's no signals being sent.
Right.
They could, at up to about 2 minutes before landing, they could destruct it remotely. Mm. But actually, after that point, it's safed. Once it's... Because again, that ballistic trajectory, we're talking about a massive, massive thing. It's going where it's going. There's nothing that it can do that can all of a sudden send it wildly off course and landing, you know, in Orlando or anything at this point. So once it's, you know, has its narrow area of where it's going to land, they actually do safe it. And they turn off the detonation system. I believe they turn it off after that, the reentry burn. Because once the reentry burn happens, again, there's only so much fuel left in that thing. No matter if it was pointed upside down, backwards, and right side to the left.
It's just nothing.
Yeah. It's not enough to do anything. So they turn off the safing. And they wouldn't even be able, I don't even think they try to send, would be able to send a remote command. Because at that point, it's going where it's going. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So we got the answers from Elon right away, too, which is that's something I love, is this openness. And people, oh, Tim, you're such a SpaceX fanboy. Of course, you're going to say it worked out great and all this stuff. But, like, I would be saying the same thing about New Shepard. I'd be saying the same thing about Rocket Lab. Like, this is just engineering, baby. Like, this is great. And having a CEO and someone that has answers is looking at the data right away and knows the answers and tells you within 30 minutes, like, yes, please. That's awesome. Like, sure, of course I'm a fan of that. Like, that doesn't mean I'm providing utterly, like, overly favoritism on this topic. So Elon says, Gridfin hydraulic pump stalled. So Falcon landed just out to sea, appears to be undamaged and is transmitting data, recovery ship dispatch. So they actually did go out to try to bring it in port. And then Scott Manley, who I absolutely adore. Scott is still probably one of the best science communicators for spaceflight. He's able to pull things off the top of his head that are just absolutely admirable. And he just, his scope of knowledge is unmatched. I strive to be as smart as he is someday. What I lack in
sounds
knowledge,
like you're a Scott Manley fanboy.
I am a Scott Manley fanboy. Absolutely. He is just the best. So then he asks, is there one pump for all fins? And then he says, presumably with backup. As in, like, does every single fin have its own pump? Because at the time it looked like only the one fin had failed and maybe that one pump had failed. And Elon says, pump is single string, meaning there's essentially one pump, I think. Some landing systems are not redundant, as landing is considered ground safety critical but not mission critical. So given this event, we will likely add a backup pump and lines. So there we go. They only have a single pump. That single pump failed. All four grid fins failed. And it looks like going forward, they hope to add a redundant pump. And sorry, this is the Tim Dodd show here this morning because I'm just ranting and raving here. But now this brings into topic, like, the Block 5 like this new Block 5 booster is supposed to be in a frozen state of development. It needs to fly 7 times before NASA will allow it to fly humans. Because NASA is a little bit weary of SpaceX's rapid development.
So now
there's speculation.
Right.
Like, are they able to add a secondary hydraulic pump? Is that too much of a change that makes NASA nervous?
Well, or who cares? You know, from, like, I don't know. I guess if I'm thinking about it, like a lot of people, you included and Scott and all these other guys, it was a successful mission. Mm-hmm. Right. The recovery, the landing failed. But again, like, if your job was to get astronauts to space, success, like, it showed, right? You right. So, I mean,
yeah,
I wonder, like, at this point, you're so far along. Would you say, cool, like, we have a known rate of failure on the hydraulic pump now. Mm-hmm. So in a future iteration, we'll do that. But we're OK with losing 1 out of 50.
That's true.
I mean, or, you know, if they even lost it, right? They said they could recover it, so we'll see. Yeah, but I guess from a business standpoint, I would question redesigning it at this point.
That's true, and maybe, you know, what they'll do is, since they have the vehicle to recover, they'll tear apart the pump, find out what failed, make a slight tweak to make sure that same thing doesn't happen. It might even be a software tweak. Like, maybe at once it reaches, you know, gets out of the atmosphere or something, they can turn it once or something to pump it over or add a heater to it or something that's not.
Yeah, if they can figure out what caused it, fix that instead of changing the design.
Yeah. Who knows? And I'm excited to see more about that. There is speculation that, like, does this count towards that certification?
Right. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's the question. It was a successful mission, I think, in terms of how you define that. So.
Yep. And, so that's the story of that. There was a few more So that Elon even said that they're, since they're fishing out, they may try to use that booster again somehow, which I just don't. They're getting a little friendly here with salt water, if you ask me. Like, don't get too cozy up with corrosive salt water.
Wait, is Elon still giving away all that Bitcoin? I think. Scroll down a little bit. Is that how they're funding this? Oh.
These Bitcoin giveaways? Absolutely. And he also said in tweeting that the cutaway was a mistake. We will show all footage, good or bad. And of course, then we did see immediately, within hours, two different shots of the failure from SpaceX themselves, from Elon. So he's right. They will show that stuff. And I think that's just admirable. There's nothing to hide here. There's nothing.
Yeah, I was really surprised that they did.
I mean,
when it started spinning and they cut away, I was like, really? That doesn't seem like them.
I
wonder if
it was
somebody lower level that just kind of made that decision and will be having a talk.
Or I wonder if they were at all worried about it, like, hitting people. I know everything you said, Tim, and we know that, like, that's not very likely at all, but I'm just wondering from the camera crew's perspective, they may not know that, right? And that would be disastrous if they live broadcast a rocket landing on people. That'd be really bad. So,
well, and maybe that's
illegal CYA.
Maybe
it's just the perception that live, you're showing footage of something tumbling back towards land where people are. And maybe that's just not a good thing to show live.
Yeah.
Sure, afterwards, post all the stuff saying, look, it was fine. We knew this. Like, they know where it's going. But the perception of, oh, yeah, by the way, this 15-story tall, 20-ton vehicle is currently tumbling out of control. That's not a good thing without the proper context, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's almost like when you see, you know, disasters, mass shootings and stuff, it's like you never want that footage to be out there. Right. It's not going to be good for anybody. So, I mean, yeah, and like we said, we understand that that's extremely rare, not likely at all. But as a camera crew live, I don't fault them at all for cutting away, because you're like, we don't know what's going to happen, right? Maybe Elon's confident in that, but look,
and maybe it's just a
I'm a TV guy. I don't know what's going
on. Well, they're people, the producers of the shows are employees of SpaceX who are very, very knowledgeable about everything. I'm sure there is actually a protocol that states, like, if this is looking too bad live, we're just going to cut to the next shot. Like, they don't owe us that.
Right.
You know? So
I do think there was one where they cut away. I think it was on the Falcon Heavy. And the two came back perfectly, and then the third one missed. Mm-hmm. And they showed us the footage later, but I think that one had zero chance of hitting anybody or anything. It was out in the ocean, right? So I think that would have been really cool to see that live.
Yeah.
And you could tell, I remember watching the webcast, you could, like, they're like, and okay. And well, it's, they just, like, you know, like a producer.
You hear this big, oh, in the background, like, moving on. Like,
yeah, right. It was just very clearly a producer was like, no, it didn't make it or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Well, we've never landed before. That's never been a thing. Why?
Yeah, right.
Yeah, so that brings up the whole, for me at least, like, I had a very stressful but good day yesterday, you know, because I'm scrambling. As a science communicator, I'm scrambling to get a video out ahead of the headlines that are going to say SpaceX failed. And again, I would do this for any company. If I knew the answer and, like, have a deep, knowledgeable understanding of the topic, I want to be able to provide information instead of misinformation, you know, and make it so that the general public at least has an opportunity to receive the answer, as opposed to, like, SpaceX failed, Elon Musk smokes dope or whatever, you know, like.
If Elon wasn't smoking so much weed, this would have worked.
Yeah. I mean, and it's important because SpaceX isn't Elon Musk. Elon Musk isn't SpaceX. There's thousands of engineers who work their butts off on this stuff. And, you know, I'm going to defend any aerospace company that, you know, that it's working this hard. I think often about Rocket Lab. I think about ULA, one of the now they're considered very old school, but they're still producing the most reliable rockets. They have an engineering team that knows what they're doing, you know, and I'll defend anything. Like, I mean, I just don't get this attitude of attacking anyone about any, like, just negative press just kills me. But I was really relieved to see the spaceflight community. What was that?
Oh, sorry. I said you got to get those clicks.
Yeah, you got to get those clicks, baby. But I was really relieved to see the journalists, the spaceflight journalists, all working together. Everyone was very, like, very factual, very, you know, understanding of the situation. You know, they, most of us all in the community have a pretty decent grasp of this stuff and the context of what's happening. And I was really encouraged to see everyone like, yeah, here's what it did. You know, good job, SpaceX, making sure they're letting the public know that the mission was successful. And even sharing footage. Again, Das Valdez, huge thank you to him, who immediately granted and gave me explicit permission to use it in a video. You know, that's awesome. Like, he could have been, no, man, yeah. MSNBC is going to pay me $1,000 for this footage so they can say it failed, you know? Like that's really cool. And I just think that's awesome.
Tim, do you ever shoot a video about something like that in advance, before the event? I just did that on the profitability one, and I think it worked well. But it definitely was a gamble about whether or not they were going to be profitable with Tesla. But if you guys recall, it was like an hour after the earnings call, I had like a full 10-minute produced video going back into the company history, blah, you know. Mm-hmm. I think it's kind of a neat technique. I think Jake from Vsauce was the one that I first saw do it, where he was like, Apple just announced their new phone, and it like cut away to like the Apple launch, and they're like, but let's take a look at how we got here. And it's like this 15-minute long video about the history of cell phones clearly was shot well before, except for like the first 10 seconds.
No, you're right. You know? I have actually done exactly that twice now. One still isn't out yet because it's about trying to catch the fairing.
Yeah,
I've shot a whole thing for it.
Like, as soon as they catch it, you're going to be like, bam, like, here's everything you need to know about that.
Yep. And then the other one was static fire when SpaceX, everyone was waiting for, like, ever to see the test firing, the static fire of Falcon Heavy. It was, like, the biggest buildup of space nerd history. And within 4 hours of it coming out, I had already had, you know, a whole rundown on what static fire is, why they do it, where it happens, all the stuff, you know, as a 12-minute long video or whatever. So, yeah, I do kind of do some of that, I guess, now that I think about it.
So these are the kind of things that throw that all off, though, right? Because you're like, I had this video about how they, you know, haven't missed a landing in 3 years. Oops.
Well, in this case, like, it just threw off the rest. Like, I'm working on this Blue Origin video that I've been working on for a long time. And also all those canceled videos. I finally got the first one out last week. but I have a ton of others to do. So just kind of threw everything off by a full day because all of a sudden I was just in full-blown, like, this is extra relevant. Let's make sure we're producing factual information, you know?
Yeah.
Well, I want to give you some credit. I was watching your live stream, and you handled it masterfully. In fact, I wanted to ask you, so you had Das Valdez, that's his name?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Did you have him up on your screen watching his Twitch feed while you were live streaming?
No, my Discord channel.
Because you were, for those who don't, I was watching it, and the thing happens, and then you're like, okay, give me a second. And like 10 seconds later, you're like, okay, I'm going to start over a thing. And then you start it over, and you shared that video. And I was like, how did he do that? Like, did you just have it up and you knew about it? Like,
my community,
professional
man,
curiosity.
My Discord community already had, you know, they're kind of paying attention. A lot of people have like multiple feeds up, and they were able to share that with me as it's happening. You know what I mean? Like, I've got the coolest community. They're super active. They stay on top of the stuff as well as I do, and it just makes for a better product in the long run, because I have people that are so invested in helping it continue to be a better product. And that's the type of thing that like is only possible when you crowdsource and have other people helping out like that. So, cheers
to it.
Well,
it worked. It was great.
That was amazing. I was like, wait a minute. How did he get this? And, you know, I also would like to take some credit for texting you WTF, WTF, WTF like 1,000 times.
I should have been like, hold on, guys. I have a real quick text message I need to answer specifically for my one friend, Ben.
You know? Hold on, guys. Hold on, all 15,000 of you watching.
Oh, so that's what my day was. And I just want to vent here between a bunch of friends and fellow communicators. And some of you that probably, Ben, I know your video this week was kind of about how like that stressfulness and like the chasing of the news cycle and stuff. That is unbelievably exhausting.
Yeah.
Like yesterday was, I had to go for an hour long walk once I wrapped up and decompress and like just, it's weird. It's this whole like your whole body gets squeezed as you're like trying really hard to do due diligence, make a decent product, still be, you know, factory relevant and timely. And then like you just, it's this weird thing, and it's a crazy ball of stress, and like I can't explain it really until you've been in a situation like that where you're like, I am compelled to do something, do it well, do it right, and do it as fast as I can. Like,
yeah. It sucks. It's hard. Right? It's like you want to do it, but at the same time, it is put so much pressure on you that that you get to the point where you're like, so for me, that's why I opted out of doing the news show. I'll talk about Tesla news here with you guys because obviously I'm following it, I'm into it, but just the whole machine of it was just too much. And for me personally, taking away from my ability to make better content, essentially. And I just want to keep doing that. So, like I still plan on, and if people don't know listening, I canceled my news show, which was a Monday thing and all that. So in order to allow me to more time to do the deeper dives. But when there is stuff that is super relevant that I'm excited to talk about, I will absolutely do so. But I just don't want to have to do it. Right. I don't want it to be, because then it becomes a rote task. It's a chore. It's not something I'm passionate about or interested in. So, so I think that's, you're right. I mean, so for you, this must be a pretty busy week, right? And season, I guess, just with everyone, with all the launches coming up. So something you said, though, Tim, that I wanted to touch on was about NASA funding the SpaceX missions. And that funding, I don't know if you knew, or Joe, if you knew this either, but the NASA funding that came into SpaceX, I think in 2012 or 2014, that was like $4.5 billion, was actually what saved Tesla from going out of business as well. Because Elon was completely broke, and that money came in, and that's what they used to actually kind of keep things going. And so it's amazing that they pushed this hard. And Elon, just on a podcast the other day, I think it was Axios, talked about how Tesla was within weeks of dying.
I saw that.
Yeah, and so they pushed so hard, which leads us into the next story, which was about their new China factory coming out.
Shanghai, is that the...
Yep, that's correct. Yeah. So I'll share my screen here. Maybe if I can find it. Bink, bink, bink. That one. You seeing it?
Yeah.
So Tesla. So this is coming from CNBC. Oh, let me resume my share. And CNBC is saying that Tesla's China factory is set to begin production late next year, the Shanghai government says. And this is interesting because this is ahead of schedule. It is partly because China knows how to manufacture things very well and has a lot of people and can get things done very quickly when they want to. And so they created a WeChat account. Tesla created a WeChat account, and then the government posted about it, which is kind of like I think it's a social network where it's like a WhatsApp over there, where you can kind of publicly see what people are talking about. And so they're accelerating it. So the second half of next year, they're hoping to have some production at the Shanghai facility. That is incredible. And that it also means that they're going to start that ramp. Their goal of getting to 1 million EVs may come much sooner than we anticipated. They have a 865,000 square meter plot. So that's a very big plot of land. And it's kind of just in time, honestly, because right now the tariff situation with EVs in China is not great. Although with the recent G20 meeting of Trump and everyone else, they did reportedly agree to reduce the tariffs on EVs coming into China. So that was something that.
Oh, okay, I didn't hear about that.
Yeah. So rewind a little bit. Tesla had dropped the price in China because their sales dropped off tremendously in October, and then the tariff situation. So they dropped the price, and then the G20 meeting happened. Xi Jinping, probably not saying that right, and Trump met. They agreed, talked about apparently a lot of stuff. And then they got they agreed. Trump tweeted that they agreed to reduce the tariffs on automobiles coming into China. So that hopefully will give Tesla and others a boost. Ironically, it's mostly going to give Tesla a boost because China is so hardcore going down this EV path right now, and they make more EVs, and obviously they're kind of the cream of the crop, right? They're the car that everyone wants. But remember, in China, they only have the Model S and X right now, so the cost is insanely high already. But of course, there are a gazillion people in China that can afford it, so. This new facility coming online second half of next year, going to be great. I don't know if we got 10,000, 20,000 cars produced next year total out of China, that'd be tremendous. But then the following year, in 2020, I would guess that they're going to ramp up to where they can probably be on a pace to get about 200,000 cars out of that plant alone. Now, the majority of those cars will be sold in China, but still overall for the company, that's a tremendous boost. The financing all comes from China, so, you know, it's kind of like contained in its own thing. So, I mean, kind of big deal. And so, obviously I'll monitor this, but if all this works out, that means that in 2020, which by the way, Tesla also is reportedly now able to produce 1,000 cars per day overall. Mm-hmm. So in 2020, let's assume that, you know, stays consistent. They should be able to produce, 350,000-ish out of the Fremont and Gigafactory here, and then 200,000-plus out of the Chinese factory. So you're over 500,000 cars, over 500,000 cars produced in a single year in 2020. This doesn't take into account all the other rumors about the Model Y being produced at Gigafactory 1, which apparently was a leaked document that may allude to that happening as well, which is kind of what everyone expects. At this point, honestly, mm-hmm. There's so much room there, and the powertrains and battery packs are already being made there. It just makes a whole lot of sense. The only thing I thought they might not do that is because of people finding 10,000 workers to come work there when there aren't that many people that live nearby, kind of a thing. So all things said. Tesla making a huge push here. And Tim, I think you dropped out there for a second, but a lot of this was predicated on that NASA funding that came in to SpaceX. I think it was 2012 or 2014 or something, right when they all were about to die. Basically, they were within single digit days of all, both companies completely dying. And that money came in as what sparked this whole thing and got us to this point.
I think that was like 2008 or 2009. It was right after the crash of the economy. It was right as they're like trying to fund the model or just the Roadster, and at the same time, like, they got funding to be able to move on to their fourth Falcon 1 mission and also secure some funding for Falcon 9 thanks to the NASA CRO. It was because of the Falcon 4 flight that they were able to get the NASA secured funding for the CRO mission. So,
which saved both companies
because that was like $1 billion investment.
Yeah, I thought it was more than that, but yeah.
Altogether, it ended up being like $1.3 billion, I think, or something, but the initial funding was only a couple hundred million only. but as they then secure, as it's like one of those, as you get to this point, then we'll give you this money. As you get to this point, we'll give you this money type of thing.
Yeah.
So how did that benefit Tesla that SpaceX got their funding? I'm a little confused on that.
So Elon was almost bankrupt. Entirely.
Yeah.
So you gave him money to then reinvest into Tesla.
So the money went to him and not to SpaceX?
He must have been able to take a loan out or something out of that funding. But it was literally like they were going to miss payroll. I think it was like December 22nd or December 24th or something like that, like right before Christmas. And then they got that phone call, and then boom, they got all the money they needed and kind of off to the races from there on out. So,
well, I know that one Falcon launch, like if it hadn't been a success, everything would have fallen apart. I didn't know that Tesla was lopped into that as well. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah. Everything that was connected to Elon was going to die at that point. Because the company still obviously wasn't making money, and it was a rough time in the economy and all that. But yeah, once they got that funding, it was all kind of came through there.
So crazy. One of those things that I think, like, Ashley Vance's book has such a good perspective on all that. But I just think that's one of those things that we'll look back on you know, in the grand scheme of human history. And it might be one of those pinnacle moments. I know that's very Elon fanboy of me, but it is important. Like, it's massive.
Well, of all the trajectories our future could go in, that is one of them. And, yeah. And if it was, then yeah, that would be a, that would be one of those moments everybody looks back on and says everything changed at that, that from that one decision, from that one thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
So quick question about the gigafactories. Do you know if the one that's going up in China is supposed to be like the one in Nevada? In terms of size and the way they lay it out and everything?
No, it will be different. So 64,000 square meters. So what is that, like 3 million square feet or something like that, or 2.5? So it won't be as big, but it will it will do everything. So they have this kind of new design for gigafactories. So the new concept is a single factory will receive raw materials and cars will come out the other side. Currently, the factory in Nevada, the Gigafactory 1, receives raw materials and power trains and battery packs come out the other side. Then they go to Fremont and are assembled with the rest of the car. So in Fremont, you know, they do all the stamping, the creating of the panels, the painting, all the general assembly, all that kind of stuff there. So the idea going forward is that all future gigafactories will be a one-stop shop. It'll be complete vertical integration, like even to the point of making the battery cells, which technically is done by Panasonic, but kind of not really. It's almost like they just hired Panasonic as contractors to work for them, because they helped design all that stuff, even the cell chemistry and everything from the very beginning. And those employees technically work for, they're like contractors from Panasonic that work under Tesla. So people will get that confused sometimes. They're essentially Tesla employees, even though that kind of, you know, business contracts don't work out that way exactly. So, that's kind of how all of that stuff works. Oops.
Okay. Yeah, I've been kind of confused because I guess I had it in my head that, you know, they had the first gigafactory and then that they had plans for more, and I thought they were all going to be that same kind of, you know, look from all the renderings we've seen of what the gigafactory is supposed to look like. And then they have gigafactory 2 over in, is it Buffalo?
Yeah.
And it's like a totally different thing. It's
That's kind of a misnomer. That's not like the best name for that. because the gigafactory is a concept that is it, you know, raw materials comes in and cars come out. That's the concept.
Is it always cars or is it like just product comes out?
Well, right now it's a mix, and Gigafactory 2 is the example where they don't make anything related to cars. They make
all solar.
Yeah, they make the solar tiles and all those things. And we actually just got a video, the first video kind of look at that recently. They posted that on the press website, which was pretty cool. So the solar tiles, the solar panels, and then power walls also. So, yeah, my understanding is all gigafactories, according to Elon, will make cars. But who knows, as we go down the road, it may be they make whatever they need to be making.
Can you help clarify? I've always been wondering, like, I would love to have a Powerwall someday. I know you're probably still waiting on yours, right?
Yes.
Wait, Tim. But what, because how long ago could you actually place an order for one? How long has that been? I'm trying to parallel that to the Model 3 here in my head.
Yeah. Okay, so
where are they at?
Right. So if you place one now, you should get it, I think, within a month or two, if you place an order for one. Now, I had an order for one at the same time I ordered solar for my house, which is going on 2 years now. And that I canceled after I earned one through the referral program. Then subsequently I've earned, I think, two more through the referral program. So at this point, I believe I have three coming, all, you know, for free, I guess, from Tesla. So I canceled my orders. So I'm still waiting on them, but again, I'm not paying for them. So, you know, as a company that's trying to make money or whatever, I'm pretty sure I'm not a priority on that list. But for people that did order them, there had been a tremendous wait. And then now they're saying it's going to be like a month or two out. And then I think March of next year is when they said it should be within 4 weeks from when you order.
I cannot wait until the same conversation is, yeah, my first free roadster was, you know, it's like 6 months
I'm
behind.
Still waiting.
But then the second roadster, I don't know. I mean, it's just, they're all so free to me. Tesla just hands me stuff all the time, but I have to wait like months. It's just awful.
Oh my God.
It gives me time to build a new garage for all my free roadsters.
I have been looking for a warehouse space. Thank you very much.
Ben's going to end up just building a garage out of power walls or whatever.
You're going to be the Jay Leno of Tesla.
Man, yeah, I would love that.
I know you would. I'm just jealous. Any salt your way is just pure unbridled jealousy. And that's the way it probably always, that's always the case, I'm sure, actually.
Speaking of the referral program, I want to tell a quick story that has, I promise it will tie into the referral program. Okay, so.
I like your stories.
I tell stories. That's what I do. So I work down the street at a coffee shop. Very much often, all the time. Yeah. And there's this one particular barista there who he noticed me one day pulling in my Model 3. And so, of course, he's like, hey, is that your car out there? I love when people say, is that your car? And I'm like, no, I just took it from someone.
I stole it.
Yeah. But no, we could start talking. It turns out he had ordered a Bolt. And I'm like, oh, cool. You know, so we're talking EVs and that whole thing. You know, it's how people do. And then, anyway, so that was, I don't know, a couple months ago. And so every time I come in, we have a little chat about EV, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, I guess it was a few days ago, I went in there and he was, you know, there and he's making my coffee. He was like, oh, by the way, he had told me that he was waiting on the Bolt, like he had ordered it, but he was still waiting for it, which I thought was interesting because I thought like that was one of the selling points of the Bolt was you don't have to wait for it, like with a Model 3. So I was like, he kept telling me, I'm like, wow, that's interesting, you know? But anyway, long story short, I came in the other day and he informed me that he gave up waiting for the Bolt and went ahead and ordered a Model 3.
Huh.
So
that's backwards.
It's taking longer for him to get the Bolt than it will be for him to get the Model 3.
Why would that be?
I'm very confused by that. He was saying that he thought it might be, and I don't know if he has special like knowledge of this or anything, but that whole 200,000 thing, like maybe Chevy's kind of doing what Tesla did in July, kind of waiting a little bit to kind of stack or whatever. That was his assumption. But again, I don't know that he knows any. He
may have Chevy's anywhere near 200,000 for EVs.
So the Bolt is, I think, their third EV. So if they all count, then maybe they're there because they had the Spark, which was 100% EV. Then they had the Volt with a V. Which was a plug-in hybrid EV.
Does that count towards the EV credit?
I believe it does. The way the EV credit works is it's based on how big the battery of the car is. So you might not be able to get the full credit, you know, but all Teslas do because obviously the batteries are massive. But I think on the plug-in hybrids, like a Prius with the battery or something, I think you can still qualify for some.
Okay. Potentially count against your 200,000.
Yeah, I think it would. I think it would.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
Yeah, because I'm not sure if it's 100. Yeah, I'd have to check. But so anyway, so they had the Spark, then they had the Volt, and then they had the Bolt. And that Bolt at this point has been out for what, a year or two? I mean, it's
over a year.
Yeah. So they could be close. I think they probably are getting somewhat close. But
Well, that just blew my mind because the assumption we all have is that Teslas take forever, and the benefit of going with a Leaf or with the Bolt or something like that is you can go get it now. And for some reason, his was taking so long, he just decided to go ahead and get the mid-range, the Model 3.
Oh, cool.
And so where that leads into the referral code was, I was there just yesterday, and he came up, he was like, hey, what's your referral code? I want to get the 6 months free supercharging. And I was like, yeah, take my referral code. So I gave it to him. And so like, I never look at that. I've shared it on like one video on my channel and I haven't really, you know, been around family or friends or people that would be interested in buying. So I haven't, you know, been sharing it a lot. But anyway, so I get into my phone in the app and I pull it up and I'm like, oh, there you go. And I'm showing it to him. And I just kind of checked what rewards I might've earned or something. And it turns out I've got enough for a Signature Series wall charger. And I was like, whoa, I got a free thing. That's amazing. Like I didn't even know. And I could actually use that because what I'm using right now is just the one that came with the car, which I really would rather have for travel, you mm-hmm. know, like leave it in the car and not have to like take it off yeah. the wall every time I go somewhere. So hopefully I can get this before Christmas, but I guess I reached out to you guys on Messenger because I was like, should I just wait on that and let these credits pile up and maybe get something bigger? Or
they're cumulative.
I'm pretty confused by the referral program.
Yeah, they're additive, I guess. So you don't like lose them, right? So when you get one, you get the choice between what is it, a Model S for kids, and a, like the little radio flyer Tesla, and then a wall connector is the other option, right?
Yeah, that was two. It was those two.
Yeah. So that one you have to choose. You can only use your first referral for that. And then at two, I forget what you get at two, but then eventually you get like a power wall or something like that. Like mm-hmm. these are all like you get all of these things. So as you get five, okay. you get all of the prizes from one to five. Right.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. That's why I was curious.
For some reason under my awards, I don't know why, it shows that I have two wall connectors, like a wall connector, blah, 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 or a little baby car. And then it says it again.
Right. And so I think the first two, I haven't looked at the referral program in a while. You know, I've haven't needed to, but.
Because it's just so overwhelming. All this free stuff.
I almost spit my coffee just now.
But I believe the first two are either of those. And so you can get two of the same thing if you want.
Oh, I'm definitely getting two little baby cars. I'm going to race them all around town.
So my neighbor,
with a Fez.
So my neighbor got two wall connectors, for example. And so
twice the charge, double the speed.
Yeah. Yeah. Because his plan is to have two Teslas. And so, yeah. Mine, it doesn't show that, but it shows all this other stuff on here.
I'm going to order that.
All this stuff in here. It shows the six cars in mode and the 30 power walls.
I think if I see a SpaceX rocket launch.
I would have a really hard time. I know you will, and I'll see you there. I would have a hard time, though, with two chargers. Like, that's great. If you have two cars, that makes sense. It would just be really hard for your power to not trip your breaker every 10 seconds. That's a lot of juice.
And it also honestly doesn't make a whole lot of sense. I've been living with two Teslas for a year now, and if you had a used one that had a really bad battery degradation and only got 150 miles of range or something, yeah, fine. Then maybe two chargers make sense. But in general, it's not necessary because the cars have so much range that unless you're driving 100 miles each way, every day, then you're not going to burn through it.
Yeah.
Like we'll charge our Model 3 once a week, you know?
Right.
So,
yeah, I was going to say our Model 3, we charge it about once a week.
Yeah. So
we keep it between about 100 and 200 miles of range and we're fine.
Yeah. And you know, honestly though, there was something, Kim from Like Tesla just posted a video about this. I don't know if you guys saw, there is some maths and sciences about how to charge and stuff. So I was watching on closed caption, so I don't think I have the right info to share. But Elon and a few other folks chimed in to their question about what is the proper amount to charge and all that. And there was something about every couple months you need to charge to 100% and then drive it back down to 90 so that the computer knows the full capability of the battery. Otherwise, it won't show you the right amount of range. So we could probably link to that video because it's obviously more detailed and better explained than I'm doing a job of right now. But there's definitely something to that. But two chargers is unnecessary, really, in most cases.
That guy's dumb. No, just kidding. No, I really am debating what we're going to do because we already have the wall charger. And I might just have to get two of those cars and crash them around each other.
Mm. Oh, the little cars?
Yeah. Can I fit in a Power Wheels? That's the question.
Jenny can. I don't know about you.
What are you saying? How dare you compare my stature to your petite wife?
We're about the same size, me and you, right?
Yeah.
What are you, 5'11 or so?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, we're right there.
Can you fit in it?
No, not a chance.
Not a chance? I mean, is it a flexibility issue? Because I'm quite flexible.
Well, come back out and you can try, you know. There
you
we go.
You can have your feet over your head and do the pedals with your hands.
Done.
But I am
do it
making,
every day. That's how I sleep.
I am, to keep the conversation going here, I am making a video on the referral program because I have data on it and it's kind of nuts. There are a lot of people getting free roadsters. I'll just sum it up as that.
Yeah, I was wondering about that. At some point, like, all their roadsters are going to be giveaways or something.
Not all of them, but a good number. So yeah,
that's crazy.
Stay tuned because that's coming out very soon. I just, it's crazy. So, and I have lots of data. So, you know, right.
Well, that would be a good one because, like I said, it's been confusing for me ever since I first signed up. Like I knew that I could give people a referral code and I would get something and they would get something. But like, so we just clarified the bit about what we get when we give away our referral code. But what about the people who, like this barista, the barista I'm talking, barista? Nathan is his name. What about, so like he's getting free supercharging right now, but that ends at some point. Like, doesn't that constantly evolve? But I mean, like he gets it for 6 months, but I mean, like, does that reward go away? Like, next week, is it going to be some other reward? Or is it always 6 months of free supercharging?
Yeah.
It changes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I feel like it changes.
It does.
I think it's just based on whatever, like, whenever they click the button, I'm assuming, whatever deal they were offered, when they click that thing is what they're going to get.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. It's whatever you redeemed it for at the time of purchase. And it's nuts. It used to be insane. I mean, I remember, I think it was October of last year when it kind of ended and it was $1,000 off plus free unlimited supercharging for life. Like, insane. That's crazy. And I think people even at the time, and then they got rid of $1,000. So then it was just free unlimited supercharging. Then it went to like $100 or something like that. Or then they did a first five people get $100 off and free supercharging. Then it was $100 worth of supercharging, which was like, whoa, dude, that's like, yeah. I mean, it's fine. Cool. But it's like not much of an incentive. And then they went back to 6 months of supercharging. So it constantly changes, every quarter. Not every quarter, but it kind of was on a cycle of every quarter. The really interesting thing is that the referral program hasn't reset ever. It's been like over a year since it's reset. It used to reset every quarter. So like this is how I think I've ended up getting numerous of the same thing is because it would be like, oh, okay, so last quarter's prizes, like here's all the stuff you won. Now we're going into the new quarter. We have the same prizes, but your referrals reset back to zero. So if I get three more, I get another Powerwall or something like that. So it used to be every quarter it would kind of reset. Mm-hmm. And then they had annual prizes as well. So that's how Kim from Like Tesla got a free Model X because they were the first ones in the U.S. to 20 referrals in 2017. This was before the Roadster prize came out. And so one thing I'm really curious about is how long this Roadster giveaway thing is going to go because there are a lot that are being given away for free. And now
what is that? You have to have five referrals to start to get a discount. And then after those five, do those first five count towards the Roadster? Or is it starting from scratch there?
Starting from scratch. That's your ante. That's how you get into the game.
And then it's about $5,000 per referral off
of a Roadster. You get 2% off a $250,000 Roadster.
So $5,000 worth.
And one of the craziest stories is this other YouTuber, Andy Sly, who I don't know if you guys know him. He makes really good videos, some good tech videos. He's been making a lot of Model 3 videos lately. In 1 month, he's got like 210 referrals. 1 month. He went from zero, because he didn't have a Tesla until just a few months ago. He went from zero to 210, which is the most out of anybody in the entire referral program. And the crazy thing is that 100% of those people are Model 3 referrals. And so that I think is where it gets a little interesting because it used to be the discount made a lot of sense because you had a Model S or Model X, let's say average price point there is 90 something thousand dollars, close to $100,000. You're giving away $5,000 worth of a car. Cool. But your margin on $100,000 ought to be able to cover that. Now, when the average price point of those referrals is maybe I don't know, 50 something thousand, 52, 53,000, somewhere in there, your margin on that is not healthy enough. Even at 20%, is they said greater than 20% in the last update letter. That is not really healthy enough to be giving away $5,000 of a prize to somebody.
Not to poke at someone like you or someone like this other guy. I definitely think like 90% of those referrals are probably people that were already going to buy a Model 3.
Sure.
And then they just pick their like favorite person to, you know, like give them credit to. And I think the idea is like, for instance, the other day I went to a shop where I'd buy prints from and, you know, like photography prints that I, when I make replications, and the owner of the shop, like I know him pretty well. And he's like, "Hey, is that your Tesla?" So I gave him like the whole, you know, I gave him a 15-minute ride and showed him around. Like, I think that's yet someone that, you know, owns luxury vehicles. He owns nice Volvos, like really high end Volvos. And he's interested in a Tesla. And I'm not saying like I deserve to have a referral, but I think that's more like what the referral's meant for and where it benefits Teslas. Someone that likes Volvos and like has never been in a Tesla and is like, "Oh, I could kind of see this, you know," and you might change their mind by giving them the ride or whatever.
I think the Model 3 thing is a different one. You're right, because people, I'm guessing a lot of the people that someone like Andy or some of the newer folks that are just coming into the referral program now are referring were already had reservations, right? They already were there. So I think you're right. I still think there's value in credit in that, providing information that helps people understand it better and all that. But you're right. The original intent was, "Hey, this is my buddy. You know, gave him a test drive. Boom. He bought one because of that." My first 115 or so referrals were SNX only. So those are ones that even if it were, they were already going down that path. It's one of those things where you gave someone enough information or whatever or motivation to cross that finish line on something that costs like $100,000. So in that case, I mean, it's like, whatever, even if they were already going down that path, I think there's still value there. When it's like, we had already placed a deposit and it's like already intended on ordering it. Yeah, you're right. It's probably like less of a push that those folks needed. Mm-hmm. But I think there's value in any regard. It's like if you ever, in the tech world, you have salespeople that any sale for like a Salesforce.com or somebody like that is attributed to a salesperson. Regardless if they like called up and said, "Hey, I want to buy it," that person still gets credit for it. So I don't think there's anything wrong with that at all. But I guess just from a company standpoint, the thing I'm wondering about, the data I'm digging into, is like, how sustainable is this?
Yeah.
Because
smart at this point,
that's a big benefit. I mean, if it were just SNX only, still, again, I think that's a sustainable model. For the Model 3 to count, that's questionable. And now with another news item we didn't touch on, but everyone in Europe they're opening up Model 3 reservations so people in Europe can actually place an order. So if you're in Europe and you didn't know that, go check your website if you didn't get an email. But now, so folks in Europe are also going to be getting referrals for the Model 3. So again, pretty like the amount of people getting free roadsters from Model 3 referrals is just going to skyrocket here very soon. So,
well, something I would suggest that needs kind of be added to that equation is the fact that they don't spend any money on advertising.
Right.
So the money that they're losing or the margin that they're losing out of doing these referrals, to me, that's just taking the place of running millions of dollars worth of ad campaigns, you know?
Mm-hmm.
That's an interesting point. I wonder if I could, yeah. Yeah, because clearly someone like Chevy spends way more money
totally.
In a day than Tesla will be giving away for referrals.
Even giving away like some of the things they're giving away, say supercharging, things like that, that is almost nothing like as far as their cost compared to, or even giving away a Roadster, yes, it's a $250,000 value, but they're maybe spending $160 on it or whatever,
Right. But that's a hard one because then you have the whole concept of opportunity cost, right? And the theory that like they could have received money for that.
Yeah.
Like somebody would have paid for that.
That's true.
So, but you're right. Like there's, it's not one-to-one, but I think it's fair to assume it's one-to-one just for breaking down the cost of it. Yeah. 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 The advertising thing is a good point. I didn't consider that. So maybe I'll throw that in there.
You're welcome.
Well, and I would also make the argument not to crap on the 6 months of free supercharging perk, but I've had my car for 3 months now. I've supercharged once. I put $10 worth of juice in my car, and it's like, that's what, $20-$30 total. Yeah. Yeah. It's like, oh yay, I saved $20 or $30. It's not, I mean, for me anyway, maybe other people who you know are in different situations would use it more, but I have not used it.
That's the super free supercharging to me has been kind of funny because it's very appealing, and like people were debating, like they had the opportunity if they had purchased a performance upgrade package for $5,000 additional. They had the opportunity. Elon's like, well, we gave you free supercharging, so if you want $5,000 back, we'll have to take away your free supercharging. Quite frankly,
yeah.
Think about how much you'd have to use a supercharger. It'd be like 150,000 miles of supercharging to make $5,000 back on it or something.
When I did some math on it, I valued it, I think, at about $2,500 over 5 years.
Yeah.
Was the value of free supercharging.
Yeah. It's not a ton. Cause I've ran all those numbers too for myself, like compared to my a car that gets 35 miles to the gallon, you know, and assuming like every mile was supercharging and all the savings, et cetera, it wasn't even like, it was like $3,000 over a 5 year period or something. And that was like every mile and driving 100,000 miles or something, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I did some stuff based on, so with Tesla, we have data on how often people supercharge. Mm. And it clearly varies from place to place. Like for example, like a large percentage of people that have Teslas that live in Manhattan use superchargers, mm-hmm. like a very large, because very few of them have a garage where they can have a charger. So those things, you know, certain areas, it makes more sense. And then other people's use cases, if they go on long road trips very often, it makes a lot of sense. Or like a real estate agent that's mm-hmm. driving around all day, every day. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense for them. But in general, like on average, it's something where over 90% of the time you're not charging at a supercharger, even if you're not charging at home. If you're charging at a level 2 charger, a public charger, it's not a supercharger, right? So you're right. Like the value dollars wise isn't, like I would have said, give me the $5,000 back, 100%. You know,
I'm quite surprised they didn't make their destination chargers smart too. You know, like connect to the internet and have it so, like, you know, say you're going to a hotel where they have the level 2, you know, destination Tesla chargers, that it connects to a system. You book a reservation with the hotel. You tell them what, you know, your VIN number or something, or you send them a little poop in an app that says like, yes, I'm going to this. They approve it. And then it allows you to charge through their system. Kind of like you were talking about the other day with the, you know, the destination charger that you found on top of a mountain, you had to pay $25 for basically.
Yeah.
Hotel credit. Like, I'm surprised those aren't connected smart, or, you know, if they are available, you know, you could pull up to it and it'll say like, hey, this is available for 4 hours, but after that point it's reserved. And then they'll charge you, you know, $1 a minute or whatever. I'm not.
Yeah. But, well, it would. Yeah, I agree. I think though it would probably be more hassle than it's worth, really, because they charge so slow. You know.
Yeah. But it's like, still a commodity. Like, we're gonna laugh at the day when you could go up to publicly a destination charger, just plug in without having to turn anything on or except like that will not be around in 5 years.
Hmm. I think it'll be maybe not Tesla ones, but it'll be more ubiquitous, just other networks out there. Like everywhere you go will have chargers.
Yes, but they will not be free. The idea of just going up to one and it being on, like you just take it off the thing and plug it into your car with no anything.
I don't know. Look at Volta Energy. Just got a huge round of funding from Google Ventures, and they're providing level 2 chargers for free. Showing ads on a big screen.
Yeah, we talked about that.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting watching all this shake out. Like, mm-hmm. I think this is the new Wild West, the charging infrastructure thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Hey, can I point out, as we now are kind of wrapping up that topic, I've noticed the past like 2 or 3 shows, I'll like try to like get us out without Joe talking. And I think that should become some kind of running gig of like, well, it looks like we're done with today's show. And Joe will be like, Wait. And it's clearly intentional, just because I just can't stand Joe. So let's wrap up today's show, guys.
I'm thinking anybody blames you.
Let's get out of here. That's going to do it for me. I'm Tim Dot. We'll see you guys.
No, I said from the beginning, I'm clearly the color commentator in this press box.
Well, it doesn't help your effort that you're talking to two people that obsess over one very specific topic, and those two topics are like our biggest topics easily.
Well, so I know that Neuralink is supposed to have some kind of announcement soon. I'd heard, this has been about a month or so now, that they came up on some new advancement that they're going to be announcing, and I've been keeping an eye out for that. The Boring Company, I guess they're going to have their tunnel opening. I guess I need to kind of, I wish I could be there for that, but I can't. But anyway, so my point is like that there's these other things that are going on, and you know, when there's something cool to talk about, I'll bring it. But
well, you do have something cool to talk
about. It's kind of hard to compete with a splashdown of a Falcon 9. You
know? Yeah, sorry, man.
I'm not compete. That's not the right word, but you know what I mean.
No, that is nah. So, but speaking, we kind of talked about the tax credit thing. But what? Bring it back up, baby.
Yeah. So you had a topic, Joe, about the tax credit. Apparently, Trump wants to cut this.
Yeah. Well. Okay. We're coming up on an hour and a half, so I don't know how much longer we want to go. But no, I mean, I thought it was worth talking about because anybody who's listening to this podcast, I'm sure, at least has an interest in EVs and the basic story, I guess. And I'm going to do very bare bones here, but you know, GM. We talked about this a little bit last week. They laid off a bunch of people right before Christmas. Not cool, but you know, they're closing 5 plants, but it's all apparently to restructure so that they can double down on EVs, which of course, you know, it's one of those sweet and sour things. It's a good thing that's happening, but I don't understand why they have to lay off so many people to do it, but that's a whole other thing. Anyway, on one hand, I understand why Trump is angry because he campaigned on there will not be closing any plants, we won't be losing jobs, and then this happens, and he's like, you know, we saved your butts, you know, 10 years ago, and now you're going to lay off all these people, and he kind of felt like he had a deal with them kind of thing. But his way of getting back at them is to apparently try to get rid of EV credits, which seems very counterproductive to me. And not even something that I think will affect GM that much. And I guess the rant that I wanted to go on was that, you know, whenever you talk about EVs and sustainable energy and renewables, you know, it's always save the polar bears. It's always environmental and stuff like that. And in fact, I just saw an article the other day that was talking about, I guess, the IPCC climate change report. And they did it with a picture of a friggin' polar bear on the top of it. And I'm like, I don't care about the polar bears. That's not really the problem here, you know? And by putting a picture of a polar bear, it just minimizes the whole thing and makes people on the other side be like, hippies, you know?
Right.
But I think the best arguments for adopting renewables and sustainability and EVs are conservative ones, frankly. Because the other argument is always, we're going to do all this stuff to counter global warming, but we're going to ruin the economy. But the conservative argument is actually, no, we're going to make ourselves more energy independent. We're going to have better national security because of it. And that the renewables segment is one of the fastest growing job segments in the country. And the point that I was going to get to eventually with the EV thing is that regardless of what we're doing here, the rest of the world is going that way.
Yeah.
You know, by pushing that down and minimizing it here, we're just going to fall behind the rest of the world, which is going to hurt us economically.
Yeah.
What do you guys think of that?
before we move on, this is a great topic, and it's a really thick and deep topic, and it's very complicated, and we're going to get a lot of stuff wrong just as we wing this. So just full disclosure here, people, remember, we're just having a conversation here. We might have some things wrong, but it's still an important thing to have a conversation with. Have a conversation with people that you disagree with, potentially. And just a friendly reminder to debate the topic, not the person. So, like, this is not a personal thing. Like, we're not, you know, we might all have a certain view on something, but this is just an open discussion. It's a safe zone. Like, don't jump down our throats. Keep me in a safe space. No, but like, don't jump down our throats if someone says like something that's not quite accurate, because it's an extremely, extremely complex that no one has the answer to. So we don't want this to turn into like, why don't they just do this? You know, that classic thing. But that being said, yeah, my biggest fear on this whole topic is exactly what you ended with, Joe, is that clearly the world is moving forward with EVs and with renewable energy. Like that is in 10, 15, 20 years, it's so obvious that we're investing in this. Like that's where we're moving. So like,
and to GM's credit, they see that they're reading the tea leaves and they're trying to adapt for that.
Mm-hmm.
Not very well, but they are adapting.
That goes with everyone, really.
Yeah.
If you look at all the German automakers, even Ford, a lot of these guys are all headed that way. I do think that there's a pairing here of autonomous versus electric, and they're both kind of going that way, but like those are can also exist separately.
Yeah.
Right. So there's more to it than just going electric. I think autonomy is another big leg in that kind of stool there.
But this is just going to be one of those things, whoever is slow to adopt this and whoever's slow to invest, like whatever country does not make this a priority, is going to get left in the dust in this topic. Like this is just like if you're like, computers, let's keep working on making paper tablets and pencils. Like that's what our country's known for. We invented the leaflet book and we're going to keep doing the leaflet book because it's the way our ancestors did it. Yeah. You're like, no, that's going to get replaced here soon, guys. Like,
I think it goes back to the economics of it. I mean, this is kind of the premise behind my whole channel is that it is so far much cheaper to own and operate an electric vehicle than it is an internal combustion engine vehicle that people that see that and it's obvious to them are already there. And everyone else really, like, there's just that stigma around owning an electric vehicle that it doesn't have the range or all the myths that we hear. And I think as those kind of melt away and, you know, as, you know, folks like yourself give other people rides that had never been in an electric car, it opens up the eyes. So I think, like, there's kind of a grassroots effect here of people, the myths and the hesitation around EVs melting away. And then when you look at the data of it, the economics just make sense. Like my brother was looking to buy an EV right now. Doesn't have a lot of money. You know, he's not looking to buy a brand new Tesla or anything like that. But I sent him a link for used Nissan Leafs that are under $10,000 with like 30,000 miles on them.
Mm-hmm.
And they get 120, 130 miles of range. He drives 15 miles each way to work. Like for under 10 grand. And the only, now the reason to do that is because it just is cheaper. Like no one is, you know, going cruising La Raza with a Nissan Leaf trying to pick up chicks. It just doesn't, that's not it. Right. But when you're like, yo, 10 grand, and then it's also 50% cheaper on fuel costs, and the thing is never going to break down because it has like three parts in it, you know, you just go, yeah, like this. So I think the whole concept around electric vehicles and, you know, more broadly, green tech, just economically needs to make sense first. Because then, as you pointed out, you can have the discussion around facts and figures and, you know, that versus any kind of polar bears or things like that, right? Because you're just not going to win hearts and minds with that. You're going to win it with, hey, this is cheaper for you.
You definitely, like, I see this comment a lot in our own comment section, is that don't forget there is a crazy high barrier of entry right now. You know, like traditionally, like 5 years ago, you either had to buy a new Nissan Leaf because there wasn't a used market.
And they were expensive.
Or you had to buy a, you know, $80,000 Tesla. These are very high barriers of entry. The average consumer, like I have friends, one of my best friends drives like a $1,200 car. You know, it's probably worth $300. He paid $1,200 for it. You know, like, I'm not saying one of my best friends is the most financially sound individual I know, but like that's the reality of his, like the idea of him even having a $10,000 Leaf is pretty absurd. But as the used market comes down, you know, as this stuff changes and as people are buying new cars and things like that, oh, there we go. The Nissan Leaf market.
It's 2013 Nissan Leaf, 42,000 miles, $8,000. Yeah. Under $8,000. I mean, dude, it's sold, you know.
I can't think of a cheaper way to drive.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Like, and the maintenance is zero and all those other things are almost none. So I mean, even a brand new Nissan Leaf 2018 here is $25,000, and that's before any tax credits or anything else. So even brand new, the prices are pretty dang good, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's happening, I think. Now the tax credit going away will hurt this momentarily. It's almost like when the government put a tariff on, was it solar panels coming into the U.S. from China? And that was because they were unfair, like flooding the market with cheap panels and moving out U.S. makers of solar panels. And my friends over at Wonder Capital did some analysis on it. The price of solar panels is dropping so tremendously quick that it basically just set it back 6 months. That's it. So like, oh, huge tariff, whatever. You know, the price of solar going up. Eh, it's the same as it was 6 months ago.
So 6 months later, it will have gone down so much that the tariffs will even out and it will be the same as
exactly. Before. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So I think the EV tax credit going away probably was a bigger deal a few years ago, like in Georgia, for example, where Kim from like Tesla lives, they had a Nissan Leaf and you were practically getting paid to drive it. seriously, I think the monthly lease on it with the state tax credits, because the dealer would absorb the state tax credit for you and then just reduce your cost. I think they said they were paying like $30-something or $40 a month for the lease on the car. Wow. I mean, it's nuts, wow. Right? And then they got rid of that and boom, like sales and leases of them just plummeted, right? It's like, yeah, you went from $30 a month for a car. I mean, that's almost free. Like you could go drive Uber for like half a day and have a terrible day and still be able to pay for your car for the whole month, right? It was that low barrier to entry. But now, as we just looked, they're the used ones, which are still good quality and functional and in all the same ways, are dropping so incredibly much that I think the EV tax credit going away won't be as big of a deal.
Yeah. Well, and I think it also needs to be said, it's not something that can be done unilaterally from the White House. I think that the Congress has to approve right. that. And with the new Democratic majority coming in, it's, you know, probably dead on arrival, but anyway.
Yeah.
Well, I think the other, just to kind of wrap this all up, I think whatever changed, just like you mentioned with the, you know, Georgia going from $30 a month to $300 a month, like I think gradual and slow change is an okay thing. Not too slow, but like not ripping carpets out from underneath companies and the infrastructure that's at place, but like, okay, say you don't like the tax credit, don't just, you know, don't totally kill it. It has a rollout period built into it now. Let that happen or whatever, but just ending things and doing really aggressive things is I think that's the biggest danger right now. Like whatever you like, I think we can all agree that that compromise between whatever everyone thinks is an okay thing, like not just going extreme to another extreme, because it doesn't give time for the market to like
right.
adjust to that, you know.
Yeah. Well, and in terms of planning, you know, companies like this, you know, like a GM or somebody or a Ford, they plan, they make such huge investments in infrastructure that they need to bet on things that are reliable. And unfortunately, the current government has been more erratic than most. So it's one of those things where I think there's probably a lot of hesitation, and it's warranted from their standpoint of, we don't know what's going to be what in 5 years. And so if we, you know, like cancel half of our lines and spend $10 billion doing this other thing, and the government pulls the rug out from under us, that could be a major problem. So I kind of understand the hesitation, right? I mean, it'd be one thing if you had kind of like a boring administration that didn't really do things as dramatically or as quickly as the current one.
You're saying we need Shredder from the Ninja Turtles because he had that boring machine.
Yeah, right. But it's just one of those things where you're just like, it would be better if it was more predictable. Like markets in general like predictability, and unfortunately we haven't got that. So
doesn't help that we're a super divided country right now and that everything's a massive like screaming match right now. So well,
that's my point about the economics, man. When it just makes more sense financially for you, all the partisanship goes away because you don't care if – like the Model 3 is such the perfect example of this. Yes, it's relatively expensive, but if you compare it to cars in its price class, it is far and away the best vehicle. But like hands down, like objectively, it's faster, it's safer, has more storage, is cheaper to own and maintain. Everything about it is better, and those aren't speculative things, right? They're objective,
quantifiable.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think like as electric cars do that, and Tesla is really the one setting the bar there, then is when I think it'll be less of a shouting match, right? Like Rivian, I'm real excited about because of that, because they're coming out with like a legit F-150 competitor, or mm-hmm. like more maybe of a Toyota Tacoma competitor. But in any event, they're coming out of the gate going, yeah, this will work for you. Not, hey, maybe, I don't know.
You'll have like, some compromises.
Yeah, like yeah. If you really love, you know, trees and polar bears, you'll yeah. buy it. But right. like everyone else. So I think it's one of those things, you know, they just have to be objectively better. And when they are, they'll win.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Cool.
The end.
Ta-da.
We'll stop.
Well, guys, what are you guys working on now? So, Ben, you're not doing live shows anymore, and you've kind of talked a little bit about what's your next video then?
Referral program. What's going on with that? And I still want to do the upcoming EVs in 2019, because there's actually some that are pretty cool coming out that I want to talk about, just to give people a sense of like what's coming out there. So those are probably it. Made it to and from Mexico, by the way, just fine. Thanks for asking.
Oh, again.
Yeah, Ben, you like Mexico. Was it there?
I almost died in the ocean, but, you know, made it out okay.
So. Oh, like me? Did you go through a tumble dryer?
No, dude, you crushed it when we were surfing. People didn't know that we went surfing when Tim came out here. But the waves were like 7 feet plus and just a super strong current. But it was one of those things like, we're down there for my buddy's birthday. You got to go. So we went out and we lasted about 20 minutes before we safely made it back to shore.
That terrifies me. After just those 3 foot waves,
Yeah, nope. It was pretty stormy and massive. So. But
no,
you know,
thank you.
We're all good. It's part of the journey.
Joe, what are you working on?
The journeys to 20,000 leagues below the sea. actually, sticking with the electric car thing, I'm going to be talking about the Dyson car that they're talking about.
Ooh,
cool.
Dyson, the vacuum cleaner guy, James
what
Dyson.
What do you know that we don't know?
Probably nothing. but I'm talking about him, his life story a little bit, and like how he kind of functions and how it's different from, say, like somebody like Elon and what they're talking about wanting to do with especially the solid state batteries on the Dyson car, and why that's important and all that kind of stuff.
That's kind of big news in the UK right now. I was talking to Robert Llewellyn about it, and he's very much like, I think he said he drove by the facility and the test track and all that kind of stuff. I mean, it's kind of a big deal out there. And
yeah, their corporate culture is interesting. I talk about it in the video, but like the average age is 26.
Hmm.
Is that young or
like
old?
He wants to hire like really young people that have no preconceived ideas and are not already, you know, like shaped by the corporate world or whatever. And he's like, I'm not giving away too much about the video here, but they all carry around these notebooks and keep all their ideas in it. And then when they fill up the notebook, they store it in a vault. And they keep that for like patent litigation purposes and for like just always having it on hand kind of thing.
Wow. Dang.
It's
Do you go into the wheelbarrow thing?
Yeah, I'll talk about it.
Yeah. Cool.
Can the title be, can a vacuum be a good car?
Yeah. Well, you want to clean up the air, right?
The vacuum cleaner car of the future with the guy in a solid state battery.
Right.
That would be a good one.
If they can pull off a solid-state battery, it's game over.
That's huge.
You'll have a 600-mile range that charges in 30 seconds or something crazy like that.
Yep. And by the way, Joe, I like that, like, you know, Ben, you asked, like, what new are you going to tell us? And Joe's like, well, probably nothing. But I think I try to do that same thing. Like, I'm finally doing a new Glenn video. That's what I'm working on right now as we speak. There's almost nothing new. There was, like, a payload user's guide last week that told us a few new details. But it's about, like, telling that story of how you get to this new thing. And Joe, I know you, I think that's a really important thing, is providing those context, making a little historical thing so people have the history of how we got to here. I think that's awesome.
When I looked into it, actually, I mean, hopefully everybody thinks this is as interesting as I did, but I mean, who didn't think the vacuum cleaner guy is going to make a car? Like, you know, it's just like, what? So out of left field. But when you look at the progress of the innovations that they've had over the years, it kind of makes sense. Like it all kind of adds up and you're like, oh, okay. Well, this is like the next logical step for them.
I mean, and you know, to give, if you don't know James Dyson's history, who would have thought the wheelbarrow guy would make vacuums? Right, you're kind of going down that same path of like, what? How did this make sense? And that's
just the next evolution of that.
Yeah, well, it's just him in general. His the
way he thinks.
Yeah. It's like, it's not surprising if he goes off in some totally tangential direction, because like he does that seemingly when he knows like there's a path forward. Right. Well, like when he can actually,
when something drives him crazy, he's like, I have to find a fix for this. It's almost like Elon with the tunnels. It's like, I hate sitting in traffic. I'm going to build tunnels.
Yeah. I love that. I admire that a lot. I'm working, like I said, talking about another billionaire is my current video that I'm hoping to have out like tomorrow-ish is about New Glenn. That thing is amazing. That's this new heavy lift rocket from Blue Origin, who's Jeff Bezos's rocket company. Awesome story. Like, I love, this is one of my favorite videos already. Again, like, just a great, sorry, like, toot my own horn. A favorite video of mine. Sorry, not like favorite video I've ever seen on the internet.
It's ever been on YouTube.
But I love doing these deep dives like this, where you have apply the history and the context of how the company got to where they are. And so you can see this, just, it's awesome. It's really cool. And then I, at the same time, like I have that, I already shot part two of Canceled. So that'll be up hopefully ASAP. And then I'm going to do, like we were talking about the landing footage stuff and talking about all those like whys, what, where, how, when's about like, are they faking landings basically? So it's going to be, it's December is my video month and I'm working way too much, but I love
it. Get after it. Get after it.
And then I'm going to relax in January for a bit, but December is the, you know, a lot of kids hang out and watch a lot of YouTube videos when they're on like, you know, holiday break and stuff. Mm-hmm. So it's a good time to be producing videos.
Yeah.
Give them something to watch. Yeah.
Cool, guys. I think that's it.
Yeah. Yay. Episode 12.
Well, thanks for sticking around, everybody who's listening. This one went longer than normal. I guess let us know if it's too long, if you like to hear us ramble about stuff and maybe want it longer. Some people really like the really long form podcast thing.
Yeah. So. Yeah, we're just winging it, so we're open to feedback. Yeah.
Also, let us know, we can do highlights if I've got kind of that engine set up if we wanted to do that. Like, probably on a separate channel would make sense because people wouldn't want to get them mixed up. But if people are interested in that, leave a comment. Let us know because we could do that.
Yeah. Well, guys, thanks for joining us. Outro music. Bye.